cabinet members now required to get permission from President Duterte before attending Senate inquiries. President Duterte says he will personally campaign against Senate Blue Ribbon Committee Chairman Richard Gordon. The Justice Department set to issue an immigration lookout order against former palace advisor Michael Yang and formerly officials. Manila to be placed under alert level 4 as government tries out a new COVID-19 quarantine system this week. We'll discuss that with Dr. Marika Carlimpin, head of the Philippine College of Physicians. And presidential spokesperson Harry Roque, unfazed by objections to his nomination to the International Law Commission. We'll tackle that with human rights lawyer, attorney Shel Diokno. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Hey, thanks for joining us. And for those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, nice to have you with us today. We begin with this story. President Rodrigo Duterte making good on his earlier threat, requiring cabinet members to get his permission first before attending Senate hearings. The president claims officials called to the Senate hearings on allegedly anomalous pandemic contracts spent hours doing nothing. He says this distracts them from their work in government.
Secretary Duque has sometimes been in control of the workings of DOH because spends most of his time nandyan sa inyo. This time I will require every cabinet member to clear with me any invitation. And if I think that he will be called for walang ano silbi except to harass, to be berated in front of the Republic, ay hintuin ko na yan at pagbawalan ko na.
Duterte also says government has nothing to do with a controversial firm formerly pharmaceutical, aside from buying their products. Formerly bagged billions of pesos in contracts from government, despite its small starting capital and existing arrest warrants against some of its officials. Duterte's former economic advisor, Michael Yang, also allegedly acted as a middleman and lent money to formerly.
The things that we ordered according to specifications, and it was then we paid. We did not sell out anything before delivery. Para sa akin, tapos na kami. Yung parmalin ninyo, pati droga, bahala kayo. Wala akong pagkialam ng parmalin. Ang tawag dito? Sa kumot-kumuti na. You can crumple parmalin. Wala kami pakialam dyan.
Well, Duterte isn't the first chief executive to bar government officials from attending congressional hearings without presidential consent. See, back in 2005, then-President Gloria Arroyo issued Executive Order 464. It states all heads of departments of the executive branch should secure a written permission from the president before appearing in any Senate or House probes. Back then, the Senate was investigating the alleged election fraud the previous year involving Arroyo herself. The executive order was challenged before the Supreme Court. In 2006, the High Court partially voided the EO, while the order requiring officials to secure the president's consent was declared valid. The Supreme Court also reaffirmed Congress's power to compel public officials to appear in hearings in aid of legislation. The judiciary also emphasized that only the president can invoke executive privilege. Meanwhile, President Duterte hits Senate Blue Ribbon Committee Chairman Richard Gordon once again. Duterte told Gordon he will campaign against him for being, quote, unfit for public service.
Every time that there is a committee hearing, you subpoena more than 100 resource persons and witnesses. And then more than half of that number comes from the government. Instead of working, they are stuck attending hearings that lasts for more than 5 hours. Are you crazy? Bakit ganun? Can you not approximate the time that you take to make this person's testify, question and answer. Lalo na ikaw, Gordon, abogado ka. Ano ba kakalain mo? Nandiyan na yung medisina, ginagamit na namin. Para sa akin, tapos na ang trabaho. Yung formalin na yan o droga, then we will talk about it. Hintay lang kayo.
The Justice Department will issue an immigration lookout bulletin order against former presidential advisor Michael Yang and formerly officials in response to the request of the Senate Blue Ribbon Committee. Meanwhile, Senator Manny Pacquiao has filed a libel case against religious leader Pastor Apollo Quiboloy. Our correspondent Katrina Domingo now joins us with those stories. Kat, go ahead.
Carmina, several developments at the Philippine Senate. We go off first with the Senate Blue Ribbon Committee formally asking the Department of Justice to place former presidential economic advisor Michael Yang on the Bureau of Immigration's watch list in case the businessman tries to flee the country in the middle of congressional investigations. In a letter dated September 13, 2021, Senate Blue Ribbon Committee Chairman Richard Gordon asked the DOJ to advise the committee to inform the committee whenever Yang is about to leave the Philippines. Yang, who has a warrant of arrest from the Senate, skipped a blue ribbon hearing on Monday where he was expected to answer lawmakers' questions about his involvement in the allegedly questionable transactions of formerly pharmaceutical corporations with the Department of Budget and Management's procurement service. Yang earlier denied that he had any involvement with formerly's deals, but officials of the company later on told senators that Yang actually helped them finance the procurement of several pandemic supplies. Now, Carmina, while Yang earlier said that he was willing to cooperate with the Blue Ribbon investigation, the businessman disobeyed the panel's directive to attend its September 13 hearing, citing health issues, particularly hypertension. Yang is reportedly staying at the Ducit Hotel in Davao City. Now, we just got word that Justice Secretary Minardo Guevara says the immigration lookout bulletin order against Yang will be issued today. Just for the information of our viewers, an ILBO is not a whole departure order, but it only requires immigration officials to inform the Secretary of Justice if the subject attempts to leave the Philippines through airports or seaports. Now, Carmina, aside from Michael Yang, a lookout order was also issued against former budget officials Lloyd Christopher Lau and Warren Rex Leo, as well as formerly officials Twinkle Dargani, Huang Tsuyen, Crizel Mago, Justin Garrado, Lincoln Ong, and Mohit Dargani. Now, Carmina, moving on to another development in the Senate, Senator Manny Pacquiao has just filed a $100 million libel and cyber libel case against Pastor Apollo Quiboloy after the founder of the Kingdom of Jesus Christ claimed that the Boxer lawmaker had a 3.5 billion peso project in his home province, Sarangani. In a 13-page complaint filed before the Makati Prosecutor's Office, Pacquiao said that Quiboloy should pay $100 million in damages plus attorney's fees for using his power and influence to spread fake news and false information. Pacquiao says Quiboloy used this deliberate falsehood to brainwash the minds of the Filipino public, recklessly propagating lies to blacken the image and reputation of an honest public servant. That came from the senator's statement released to reporters just a few minutes ago. Pacquiao also tells us that Quiboloy even had the audacity to quote the Holy Scripture for his life, misleading his flock and confusing the public with the end view of blackening another's reputation. Pacquiao also noted that Quiboloy's allegations against him were delivered after he drew the ire of President Rodrigo Duterte for saying that there is corruption in government. Carmina.
Thanks a lot. Our correspondent Katrina Domingo there joining us on the line. Back to more news this noon. After getting rejected for asking a copy of President Duterte's statement of assets, liabilities, and net worth, a lawyer is now seeking the document directly from the chief executive. Our correspondent Mike Navallo joins us now for an update on that. Mike, go ahead.
Hi, Carmina. The lawyer was given the runaround. This bid to secure the president's statement of assets, liabilities, and net worth, or SALEN, went straight to the source and challenged Mr. Duterte himself to release the SALEN or issue an authorization. Lawyer Dino De Leon, in a letter dated September 10, pressed the president to reconsider the earlier decision of the Malacanang Records Office referring him to the Office of the Ombudsman. De Leon's earlier request was turned down, citing a memorandum circular issued in 2012 from the Office of the Ombudsman that requires all requests for the president's talent should be coursed through the Ombudsman as the official repository. But the Ombudsman in July denied De Leon's request, carrying a more recent memorandum circular requiring a notarized authorization from the public official who filed the challenge. So in his letter, De Leon asked the president that if he cannot issue or provide his challenge, to issue him his notarized authorization so that he can gain access to the challenge of the president from the Office of the Ombudsman. De Leon had earlier told the ANC he will look at possible legal remedies, which could include going to court. He also raised the possibility of impeaching Marcares, saying his actions in hindering transparency could be considered betrayal of public trust, an impeachable offense. Lawyer Christian Monsod, one of the framers of the 1987 Constitution, said yesterday, Ombudsman Samuel Marcares' memorandum circular, in effect, limited access to silence only to public officials, which are not the public contemplated under the Constitution. The Right to Know Right Now Coalition noted, this is the first time an ombudsman has restricted access to silence and had proposed jail time against those who would comment on silence. The Constitution requires the president and other high-ranking officials to disclose their silence to the public. And in fact, President Duterte signed an executive order in 2016 reminding public officials to disclose their silence at the start of his term. Mr. Duterte did not release his silence starting 2018, according to efforts made by the Philippine Center for Investigative Journalism. In his letter, De Leon challenged Mr. Duterte, given your claim that you are for transparency and against corruption, I look forward to your positive response within 5 days from receipt of the letter. We are still seeking the side of Malacanang, Carmina, and we will update you on that once we receive word from Malacanang. Carmina?
Right. Thanks a lot, Mike. Take care and you keep safe. Well, government may start vaccinating the general adult population against COVID-19 next month, but President Duterte says this will be hinged on whether or not the country can receive a steady supply of vaccines.
Always we have to keep equity in mind na dapat unahin na natin ang walang-wala at mga mahirap. There are a lot of Filipinos waiting to be vaccinated. And so doon sa kanila in the respective jurisdictions, I would suggest that unahin muna ninyo yung mga mahihirap. Those who cannot really afford to be traveling back and forth. As a matter of fact, it would be nice of government to go to their places. Total, alam naman natin yung blighted areas eh.
Metro Manila will be placed under alert level 4 on Thursday when it becomes the pilot case of government's new COVID-19 alert system. There are 5 alert levels, with 5 being the strictest lockdown. Under that level, non-essential businesses won't be allowed to operate. This will be imposed in areas with high COVID-19 cases and where hospital and ICU occupancy rates are in the critical stage. Under alert level 4, alfresco dining will be allowed at 30% capacity. Indoor dining will only be at 10% capacity and only for fully vaccinated individuals. Personal care services will be allowed to function at 30% capacity for outdoor services and 10% for indoor settings. The same goes for religious gatherings. Minors, people above 65 years old, individuals with comorbidities, and pregnant women are barred from going out. Joining us now is Dr. Maricar Limpin, president of the Philippine College of Physicians, for her reaction to the guidelines of the new COVID-19 alert level system. Dr. Limpin, nice to see you again. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, good afternoon and nice to be here with you.
All right. So before this new alert level system it was imposed or thought of, we all know what happened then. You had an appeal, right, for lockdowns to be extended. But it looks like their minds are set. This is going to be imposed come Thursday. That's the day after tomorrow. What are your thoughts now about this new alert level system? Dr. Lim Bin? Dr. Lim Bin? We're going to try and get her back on the line. It's imperative that we get her reaction to this, given that they presented before the IATF to appeal to government to extend the lockdowns, given the current situation of our hospitals, especially in areas where there have been where there's a surge that's being experienced, a surge in new COVID-19 infections. I think we have her back on the line or on Zoom, Dr. Lim Bin.
Hi, good afternoon. Yeah.
Okay, sorry about that. All right, so your reaction now to this new alert level system. They've made up their minds. It's a go come Thursday.
Actually, we're still trying to analyze what will be the effect of all these alert levels. But I think more than just the alert levels, there will also be granular lockdowns that will be implemented. And as of the moment, we still do not know the specific guidelines for these granular lockdowns. And when I say specifics, we really need the details, no, of the specific guidelines on how they will be able to implement this, all of these.
Whatever the alert system is, whether we stick to the old one or whether we implement this new one, well, that's no longer a question right there. What to you is the most important thing? What should be the motivation? What should be the end goal of these new quarantine systems?
Well, the most important thing probably is to ensure that when we try to, you know, the main objective really is to live with the virus. I think that is the main objective of the government. But at the same time, being able to protect the citizens, no, from the virus, from infection. So what is important right now is to ensure that when people go out on the streets, that they will also be protected, no? To ensure that the transportation that they are going to use will be safe, and that when they go to their respective workplaces, these workplaces should also be safe. So I think that's the most important thing. And right now, from last year up to now, government will have to really do something to provide the safe transportation that majority of the workers will need. No, so they need to contract out transportation services. That's the only means, no, by which we can be able to make sure that we will be able to transport the people to their workplaces safely.
And you're saying this because of the cases that you've been seeing, that they probably have contracted the disease while commuting to work, doctor?
Well, we have seen so far, no, in the past weeks that traffic has not really been quite bad, no, and we see many of the transportation that is filled up without, you know, being able to comply with the minimum health standards that include physical distancing. So that means that the transportation service is still lacking, so therefore we need to provide more transportation. So even if, like, let us say it will take time for people to get to their workplaces, but at least, you know, the people in one jeep or in one bus, no, they will be they will be able to maintain at least a safer distance, no, compared to what we have seen in the past. And I think this is really contributory to the spread of infection.
But doctor, when they do get to their places of work, when you still have the same problem of ventilation, if that hasn't been resolved as well, then you're just delaying. You're just delaying the problem right there. So are you talking now more about having a multi-layered approach, doctor?
Yes, right. And that is why I say also that the government must also see to it that when the people arrive in their workplaces, that the workplaces will also be safe for them. So that means that in the event that they don't have the appropriate ventilation, then they have to make sure that probably they put something, you know, just to make sure that the air that is inside of the a certain place will actually be ventilated out of the building, you know, or maybe also be able to maintain, you know, the physical distance, you know, that is required. Maybe even more than 1 meter, you know, distances, because we know that right now the virus is actually being transmitted airborne. So that means that these viruses, you know, these particles can actually travel distances of more than 6 feet.
Doctor, you mentioned a while ago about granular lockdowns, and it's still not clear to you what the guidelines for these granular lockdowns will be. However, if you were to be asked, what do you think should be the guidelines for these granular lockdowns for it to be effective in stopping the spread of the disease, for helping the situation in various hospitals as we speak, Doctor?
Well, of course, no. If we place certain localities under granular lockdowns, and they say it can even be applied in buildings, so the main objective probably is to really keep the people within that space, no, not for them not to be able to go out, except probably when they are healthcare workers, no, and or they are working in essential work, no? They are involved in essential work, like policemen, you know, firemen. So these are people who are needed to be in their jobs, no? So in that aspect, then I think very important, no, to keep the people, the rest of the people there, confined in that area. But the problem will be, there will be problem in implementation if, you know, these people will not have the assurance that after the lockdown, they will still have work, not that they can report to, and that during the time that they are on lockdown, that they should be receiving some, you know, form of financial assistance. And then for the government to be able to make sure that people won't be able to go out of that place, then they need to also employ several men. You know, several lockdowns, several granular lockdowns in one LGU will require personnel, no, to ensure that the lockdowns, the rules under the lockdowns will actually be implemented and enforced.
Kasi, Doctor, you made a good point there. Kung kumakalamang sikmura nitong mga malalockdown, they will find a way.
They will find a way
to go out. And also, if they have that fear of losing their job,
yes,
they're going to have to find a way to get out.
Right. So that means that you need to put in people so that these people will not actually go out.
Yeah.
So it will be up to the local government.
But also the assurance that once the lockdown is done, that they still get to keep
Right. And it all depends, you know, sometimes these granular lockdowns may actually, you know, take some time. It's probably not just 2 weeks, no? It can probably take for a month. You know, people will already be quite scared, apprehensive, no? So that they might not be able to retain the work that they have.
All right. Finally, with this new system set to be in place by Thursday this week, if you still don't have a steady supply of vaccines, and if we're still sort of falling behind our targets in terms of testing and all that is needed to really live with this virus, do you think this system will work?
If we have problems with vaccine supplies, if we continue to allow, you know, very poor control of our borders, if we will not be able to really put into place, you know, safe transportation, safe workplaces, then I think that our problem will continue to persist, and that And I think that is where we, so basically we will still be back to the basics, no, back to zero, basically. So I think we need to really do more, and we cannot really just allow, you know, just keep on experimenting without putting into place the more aggressive measures or interventions that has to be placed. No, this may be hard interventions, but they are needed, and this will require definitely resources from government.
Dr. Mary Carlimpin there, president of the Philippine College of Physicians. Always a pleasure talking to you. Thank you for all that you do. Keep safe.
Thank you, and stay safe, everyone.
Thank you. Appreciate it. We're going to take a break now. Up ahead, we'll speak to human rights lawyer, attorney Shel Gyokno, on presidential spokesperson Harry Roque's nomination to the UN International Law Commission. Stay tuned. This is Stateline Philippines. You're on AMC. We are back. You're still with Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. Cabinet members now required to get permission from President Duterte before attending Senate inquiries. President Duterte says he will personally campaign against Senate Blue Ribbon Committee Chairman Richard Gordon. The Justice Department is set to issue an immigration lookout order against former Palace Advisor Michael Yang and formerly officials. And Metro Manila to be placed under alert level 4 as government tries out a new COVID-19 quarantine system this week. But Dr. Maricar Limpin of the Philippine College of Physicians says government must implement stronger interventions to ensure people are protected. Back with more news, the Philippines records over 20,000 new COVID-19 infections Monday. Active cases now stand at more than 180,000. More than 600 new cases of the more contagious Delta variant were detected in the country as well. An epidemiologist believes this will make it harder to achieve herd immunity.
The concept of herd immunity assumes that your population of vaccinated and unvaccinated is randomly distributed. But what we have here is that, for example, in Barm, only about 77% are fully vaccinated, whereas in NCR it's about 60 to 65%. If we look at our original target of 70% vaccination, we will have to vaccinate down to 15 years old. 18 and above do not reach 70% of the population.
More children are being admitted in hospitals due to COVID-19 in Bacolod City. Since June, the Corazon Locsin Montelibano Regional Hospital has admitted 18 pediatric coronavirus patients. Three of them have died. The hospital's chief doctor said they are also testing newborns after two were confirmed positive for COVID-19. Non-COVID wards there also getting full.
The COVID area, I think from the latest report at of 6 a.m., ay isa na lang ang bakante namin. And I think walo pa ang dapat ma-admit ang aming CCU ay critical care unit ay puno na rin. No? At saka kung kagustuhan din namin na na mabigyan ng ma-expand po namin yung aming critical care unit, kaya hindi po namin magawa yon dahil kulang nga po kami ng mga tao to man the critical beds na gusto namin idagdag.
Unsatisfactory, that's how the World Health Organization's representative to the Philippines described the country's COVID-19 vaccination drive for the elderly population. The WHO says there are more than 3 million senior citizens who have yet to receive their first shot.
this is unsatisfactory. We need to correct this as quickly as possible because we are seeing a surge affecting many other regions. And many regions in the Philippines, the elderly coverage is still below 40%. We need to do better, and we urge the local chief executives and the local health authorities to prioritize, to create avenues so that these most elderly people can be vaccinated and their lives protected.
In other news, Independent International Commission Investigate PH says the Duterte administration's war against the poor persists more than a year and a half into this raging pandemic. In its final report on the human rights situation in the country, the group said the lack of government support for those affected by the pandemic is a violation of people's right to livelihood. It also pointed out efforts by state forces to quash trade unions.
The budget cuts, were really confounding. You know, everywhere else, pretty well in the world, governments have gone into big debt, which will be a problem later, but they've gone into debt to make sure people can stay alive and stay employed if possible. But in the Philippines, after just 3 months, it went the other way. It cancelled all of that support and instead increased the sort of punitive powers, that is the police and the army. And NTFLCAC got this huge budget increase to do this. So just at the time when people need to be able to speak up to just even protect their jobs and protect their incomes, they're getting threatened with death or kidnapping, or their family members are threatened.
Investigate PH's first two reports focused on violations of civil and political rights here in the Philippines. Presidential spokesperson Harry Roque, unfazed by objections over his nomination to the UN's International Law Commission. More than 220 groups and almost 20,000 individuals led by rights group I Defend have signed an online petition calling on the ILC to reject his bid. The group questioned Roque's integrity. They say he transformed from a human rights lawyer to an apologist for the Duterte administration. The Free Legal Assistance Group, or FLAG, has also written to the ILC to block Roque's nomination. The group said Roque's public defense of extrajudicial killings, his belittling of the ICC, and his disregard of the effects of rights violations in the Philippines make him unworthy to even be considered for the post. But Roque, who is in New York for his bid, denies this.
That's absolutely bereft of legal merit po. Kasi kung meron yun, dapat may kaso na ako. Ang kanilang dahilan ay dahil sa International Criminal Court, hindi po lahat ng bansa ay miyembro ng International Criminal Court. In fact, karamihan po ng boboto, hindi nga po silang miyembro ng International Criminal Court. Minorya po ng miyembro ng General Assembly ang mga miyembro ng International Criminal Court.
And we'll be speaking now to Attorney Shel Diokno. He's chairman of the Free Legal Assistance Group. Attorney Diokno, good afternoon to you, and thank you for joining us today.
Good afternoon, Carmina. Hello.
All right, so talk to us first about how important is the country's representation to the ILC?
Well, the International Law Commission is really a body of experts that develops principles of international law. And it's good that our country has a say in that commission. However, in terms of who should be nominated by the government, we really believe that the government should be very selective and choosy in making sure that their nominee is truly fit for that kind of job.
Why, having said that, why is it important for FLAG, for your group and the more than 200 other groups, that person must not be Secretary Harry Roque?
Well, FLAG has always been very concerned about human rights in the country, and we have always come to the defense of people who are victims of human rights violations. It really is very disturbing to us because the spokesman of the president has really made a lot of public announcements that have belittled human rights and really have prevented the issue from really becoming something that should be of concern to everyone.
But you've just heard what he said. He said completely denied that he has blatantly disrespected human rights. In fact, he said if he did so, then there should be charges, cases filed against him now, but there are none. That's his defense. What do you say about that?
Well, it doesn't necessarily follow that cases should be filed against him, considering the climate of fear and violence that we have been experiencing in the country for so many years. It's understandable that no cases have been filed. Now, insofar as his reason is concerned, I don't think it follows that just because cases have not been filed, he is, as he claims, not... I forgot the word he said, but that what the complaints against him have been, according to him, without basis.
Mm. What is it about this position that makes it really an object of desire for someone like Secretary Harry Roque?
Well, it does carry with it a lot of, let's say... You have it boosts your credentials if you become a member of the International Law Commission. There are only 34 members of that commission in the whole world, so you would be considered as a real expert in international law if you became part of that group. It was the International Law Commission that actually early on had proposed for the creation of the International Criminal Court and some of the treaties that have now become a very basic part of international law. And that's one of the reasons why we are very concerned, because you know the International Criminal Court was created precisely so that there would be respect for human rights and that there would be accountability. Mm-hmm. And the spokesperson of the president has made certain public announcements that belittle the International Criminal Court. We don't think it's fitting for someone like that to be part of the International Law Commission.
And tell me something, Attorney Diokno. In his past life, this is pre-Duterte, pre-being the spokesperson of the president, he really built himself as an international law expert. In fact, in his CV submitted to the ILC, he did make a mention of the many years that he has taught at the University of the Philippines on international law. But at this point, can you actually separate his expertise from his persona as spokesperson of the president, being an alter ego of the president?
I don't think you can separate the two. I think that regardless of who you are representing, you must remain faithful to the rule of law, especially since he is a lawyer and he claims to be a human rights lawyer. He claims to be an expert in international law. It's very basic in international law that we respect the rule of law, meaning that no one should be above the law. Everyone should be held accountable for anything that they do that violates the law.
Attorney Doctor, what makes you confident, you together with more than 200 groups, that the ILC will listen to your pleas and reject the bid of Secretary Harry Roque?
Well, you know, the nominees of the governments to the International Law Commission are actually elected by the members of the General Assembly of the United Nations. So we hope that they will be discerning in their selection of who they will vote for. That's one of the reasons why we hope they will learn more about the nominees, including Mr. Roque.
Well, what do you think about how he has been facing the objections to his nomination? When he said that, we talked about it a while ago, that there have been no cases filed against him, so therefore, you know, that sort of excuses him from all the criticisms being hurled against him. He also said that, you know, there's no salary for this position, that they would only meet sparingly throughout a year. What do you think of all these justifications being said by the secretary?
I'm not surprised. I don't think they were unexpected from him.
Why do you say so?
Based on his past performance publicly, I would say that it's a very typical type of statement coming from him.
I'm going to move topics now, Attorney Diokno, and move on to what the president just said, that he is basically making good on his threat to bar cabinet members from attending the Senate Blue Ribbon Committee hearing on allegedly anomalous pandemic supply deals. What do you make of that? What does that tell you?
Well, it's very sad because I think we all want transparency and we all want to know what has been happening to the people's money when it comes to the pandemic. It's about time that the government really opens up its books and shows if there really wasn't anything wrong with what happened. And they shouldn't really be hiding behind that kind of those kinds of requirements. Basically, we have a constitutional right to information on matters of public concern. Any citizen, every citizen has that right. And the Senate itself, in aid of legislation, has the power to inquire into what's happening to public funds. We have to remember that in this pandemic, so many of our brothers and sisters, Filipinos, are going hungry, are really, really having a hard time. And it behooves the government to really make sure that the money that is supposed to go to there to help our people is really going in the right direction.
But based on the Supreme Court decision on EO 464, Attorney Diokno, the president has the right to ask these cabinet members to ask him first for permission before appearing, before inquiries.
That's true. The Supreme Court did in 2006 come out with that ruling and say that as far as heads of departments of the executive branch are concerned, the president has that power. They did invalidate, however, other portions of the EO 464 as far as other officials of the government are concerned. So, but, you know, the composition of the Supreme Court then is a bit different from the composition of the court. Now, if this issue were to be brought before the court, I hope they would take a fresh look at the issues.
So with the precedent perfectly having the power there based on that 2006 decision from the Supreme Court and with the Blue Ribbon Committee hearing really being relentless in their digging of facts and truth based of surrounding rather these allegedly anomalous pandemic supply deals. Do you think that it might be a possibility that these two co-equal branches of government will be pit against each other? And if so, what would be the ramifications there and ultimately the effect on the people?
Well, I think since the Blue Ribbon Committee is really honing in on the PSDBM, the Procurement Service Agency of the Department of Budget and Management, that they should require that the agency to really produce all the documents that it used and it did in processing those transactions. It's very important to me. I would like to know, for example, how the company formally was able to convince the PSDBM that it was technically and financially capable of being the subject or having a transaction with the government. That is a basic requirement, and the documents should be there with the PSDBM. I would want to know as well what are the standard operating procedures or the manuals of the agency, because they would clearly spell out what should have been followed. And mm-hmm. from there, it's easy now to ask where are these pricing assessments, where are all these documents that would show that there was due diligence done before these transactions were entered into.
But see, Attorney Diokno, we've seen a lot of Blue Ribbon Committee hearings in the past. Some observations point to politicking at this point because the elections are near. What do you say to those observations that sort of trivialize the truth that's being revealed in the current Blue Ribbon Committee hearing?
Well, you know, that is true. It seems that they really rev it up when elections are near. But regardless of that private agenda or personal agenda, I think it's really important considering what is at stake here, you know, the people's money in under a pandemic, that we get to the bottom of this and we find out what really happened as far as those billions of pesos of the people's money are concerned.
And talking about the 2022 elections, how is your bid for the Senate shaping up?
Oh, it's going well. I'm very optimistic, and I'm looking forward to the campaign.
You know it's going to be different this time around. How different do you think will it be for you?
It's a little bit easier, I think, this time around in the first place because I have that earlier campaign under my belt. In the second place, I learned a lot during that previous campaign. And the political landscape has also changed. There's a lot of conversations that are going on online, which kind of levels the playing field a bit. Because you know how it is in an election, it's typically a question of advertisements on television and radio. That will still be a big factor, but at least progressive candidates will have a platform, social media platforms, that will be open to them and will not have carry that kind of cost.
Talk to us about Isambayan. Whatever happened there? And which vehicle are you going to use in your bid for the Senate, a Senate seat?
Well, I understand that the Isambayan is still on the processing the possible unity slate. I understand that they will be coming out with some announcements shortly, or we expect within the month. And I'm eagerly awaiting what they will say.
Are you going to go with them, or are you going to go with another party, perhaps being a how is it looking like?
Isambayan is not a political party.
Exactly.
It's simply a movement that hopes to get the opposition unified in supporting a common slate.
So are you going to run as an independent, but under the umbrella of Isambayan? Is that how it's going to look like, Attorney Dokna?
Right now, I am an independent. So we will have to wait and see what will happen. There's still a few weeks before the filing of the certificate of candidacy. But that is my present status. Yeah.
How do you differentiate your brand of independence from the other brands that we've been hearing these past few weeks, that they're neither pro-administration nor pro-opposition? That's sort of saying that they're independent too, but how is your independence different from them?
Well, definitely in the first place, I put myself in the category of the opposition. In the second place, I believe my being an independent is based on principle. I've always been one who argues always on issues, and that's how I intend to carry my campaign. It's an issue-based movement that requires us to really look deeper into what's happening and to figure out long-term solutions to our problems.
Attorney Shel Diokno, President or Chairman of FLAG, thank you so much for joining us today. Always appreciate you coming to the show, sharing your insights. Take care. Keep safe.
Thank you. Thank you, Carmina. Take care.
Take care. Thanks. All right, moving on to business. Before we go, majority of CEOs believe it could take more than 2 years for the Philippine economy to bounce back from the pandemic. The latest survey by the PwC and the Management Association of the Philippines showed half of the 178 CEO respondents see the economy recovering in 2 to 3 years. 23% expect the recovery to take more than 3 years. As for the Philippine government's vaccine rollout, 2/3 of the CEOs are dissatisfied with it. They say government should start investing more in healthcare. A U.S. bankruptcy court grants Philippine Airlines access to a loan facility as part of its Chapter 11 filing. The court allowed PAL to borrow or access the debtor-in-possession loan facility of up to $20 million. This would allow the airline to maintain its assets, pay employees, and fund its operations. The flag carrier earlier filed for bankruptcy protection in the U.S. Despite the filing, PAL said it would be business as usual for the airline as its restructuring continues. World News Now, tensions run high at a congressional hearing on America's withdrawal from Afghanistan. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken insisted former President Donald Trump had negotiated the withdrawal with the Taliban and that the Biden administration did not consider renegotiating that deal because of the group's threats to resume killing Americans. At least two Republican lawmakers had called on Blinken to resign.
Did state at any point in the evacuation process block American citizens from leaving Afghanistan?
No, we did not.
None. Your testimony before Congress is that state didn't block any American citizens leaving
to
Afghanistan.
To the contrary, my officers, men and women, ran into the building from around the world to help Americans get out.
It's a simple yes or no. I heard you do it with Mr. Connolly. You can do it with me. Yes or no? I just want to clarify. You didn't block anybody. State didn't block any Americans.
No. Okay. They were there to help Americans get out.
Why it would seem somehow logical for President Biden to leave the, quote, most advanced military weaponry, why some would not speak out against that if they were getting the false intelligence because it was coming from the top down to manipulate it. In my opinion, that's absolutely aid and comfort to the enemy. I absolutely wonder if you were complicit in this as well. I find it hard to believe that President Biden would do that without you being aware of this.
In sports, U.S. Open women's champion Emma Raducanu gets praise from U.K. Prime Minister Boris Johnson. The 18-year-old became the first ever qualifier to win a Grand Slam title and the first British woman to hoist a major trophy since 1977. She defeated fellow teen sensation, Filipino-Canadian Leila Fernandez for the crown.
Sort of resilience under pressure. That was what came through to me. You know, there were so many moments when you thought the match was going to go the wrong way, and then she just held it together. It was just fantastic. So many, many congratulations.
And that'll do it for today. Thank you for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, Dateline Philippines podcast is on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Play back this newscast too on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on ANC.